It was an unknown wilderness. It wasn't long before they went into the wide valleys of Kentucky through the Cumberland Gap.
Welcome to this edition of Old Kentucky Tales, the only podcast that solemnly swears that none of its participants have fought a duel with deadly weapons within this state or out of it. Today's title is Sex Sells Even at Slave Auctions. I am your host, Brent Taylor, Assistant Professor of History at West Kentucky Community and Technical College. And with me is the man whose public speaking class is so fun that students simply refer to it as the Donner Party. He is an Associate Professor of Communication at West Kentucky Community and Technical College, Jason Donner.
You know, that sometimes comes up, the Donner Party, especially in a restaurant. And you give them their name, and then they announce, Donner Party of Six, please, your table's ready.
And you never know what tonight's special is going to be. Yeah. In this episode of Old Kentucky Tales, we will look at the interest rate hikes past and present in our yesterday's news segment. And for our main event, we will examine an infamous slave auction incident in Kentucky. And along the way, don't forget to support the fake history sponsors who support Old Kentucky Tales. We are indeed ready for yesterday's news, and you might have noticed that there's some concern out there about interest rate hikes. Are you concerned or are you excited?
I'm undecided.
You're undecided?
Yeah.
It depends on if you're going to borrow or save, right?
Right. I'll probably do neither.
Yeah?
Yeah. I got all my cash and just in my pocket.
You learned from the Great Depression era, right, didn't you?
Yeah. These shows are having an effect on me.
Okay.
It's in the mattress.
Yeah, yeah. It's out in the garage somewhere.
Yeah.
It's in the freezer and cold hard cash kind of a situation.
But you're talking about positive interest rates, right?
Well, I think
like
if
making
you're saving,
money.
Yeah, yeah, right. If that's the case, if you're saving, you might want the interest rates to be a little bit higher.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, if you're looking to buy a house, you want them to be as low as humanly possible. So that's one of the big concerns out there, which got me noticing back in the 1980s, I read a Kentucky newspaper that said you could get 12.3% interest.
Oh, this is in the 80s.
The 1980s,
wow.
Right. The interest rates had gotten really high there,
yeah,
because they were combating inflation coming,
mm-hmm,
out of the 70s.
Right, 1981.
And that was one of the tools there. Yes, 1981.
Yeah.
Right in the heyday of that. Before then, they started to ratchet it down into the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got the super low rates that we got towards today.
Yeah, you hear people talk about it in movies too, or on old TV shows. It used to be that you could put money in the bank and earn money on it. It was called interest. Now there's nothing, right?
There's a sliver of
it's
interest.
It's a sliver.
It's kind of like 0.0001203%.
Right.
I think that was the last rate that I got.
Yeah, or just find a quarter on the street. Same thing. So this is 12%.
Yeah, yeah, 12.3%. So you could do even better, right? To get the point. I mean, right now you're getting 0.3. So imagine that plus the 12.
Yeah, 12 is really high.
Yeah, it was a good time to save, bad time to buy. You could hardly get a home loan and everything because it was just so,
mm-hmm,
burdensome.
Now, did you have a little savings account when you were a kid? They'd write it in? I did that. There was some interest on that.
Yeah, I don't really remember any details about it.
Okay.
But if I had that, then for sure it made a little bit of money. And when your parents always told you, yes, you should be putting money in the bank, back then you could really, really make the case for it.
Yeah, it made me really happy just to look at that book and not have my money.
Yeah, I can definitely see that one. But already, even though we're having so much fun, we have got to pause for a word from our sponsors.
The J.T. Hinton Company, Undertakers and Embalmers, Paris, Kentucky. Ambulance calls promptly attended to with our limousine invalid coach. Hearse used for funeral purposes only. Day phone 36, night 56.
So, Jason, What would they use the hearse for besides funeral purposes?
Yeah, I thought that was kind of neat. Even though the ambulance and hearse look exactly the same, I guess if you need an ambulance, you don't want to go to the doctor in a hearse.
That could be a little bit creepy, right?
That would be in poor taste,
so
I think.
You get a little chest pain, you call the ambulance,
yeah.
They pull up out there, and it's like, that's the hearse.
Yeah, you called the wrong one. Called the hearse.
Oh,
I'm still alive.
The hearse number instead of the ambulance number.
It's kind of, I mean, people would just call them on their own. They're like, hey, someone died. I need you to come and get them.
I don't know about that part of it, but for sure, you'd got to be creeped out. I mean, it's kind of like you almost expect a dude in a hood with the little skeleton hand to be driving the thing. And there he's going to pick you up when you're not feeling well.
These phone numbers are just always interesting to people, that to think that you would be calling 36.
Yeah, not too many phones back then.
Yeah, not too many phones. Why do you need so many numbers?
And if you want to know something crazy, I grew up in Webster County, and all we had to dial was four numbers.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. If I dialed 2125, I got the person at the other end.
Okay, so it just assumed the same digit, the same first three.
Everybody had the same prefix.
Yeah, I think we did that, but I think we had to tack on that last one. We had to do the last number of the first three, but we could still do it.
Okay, yeah. Kind of like the extension within a corporation or something like that.
Yeah, but now we're dialing, I mean, we have to dial 10 numbers now, but that's going to happen. Just more numbers, got to separate them out.
Yeah. I wonder when the 11th number is going to come along. Probably not too long from now.
Yeah.
So many different phone numbers, right?
They just have to run out.
And now we are ready for our main event. And that is, there was a guy named the Reverend Calvin Fairbank.
Okay.
So he's a man of the cloth, obviously, and he showed up at a slave auction. And you might think, well, that's an unusual pairing.
Right. He wouldn't want to buy a slave.
Or would he? Because let's listen to his story.
Yeah.
Upon the block, before all that gazing multitude, stood the auctioneer by his victim. He directed attention to the valuable piece of property, using all his cultivated art to enhance its interest, calling particular attention to her exquisite qualities as a mistress for any gentleman. And this he kept prominent in the most insinuating and vile manner, outraging common decency. Bids began at $250. A lot of money back then. $1 a lot of money back then. And went up to $500. When the more respectable men of the South left the field to the Frenchman and myself.
Uh-huh.
That's the Reverend Calvin Fairbank.
So let me get this straight. There is a slave that they're selling, and everyone has decided that's too much. They don't want any part of it except for the Reverend.
Yeah, you've seen this in the movies where it gets down to two people and they're trying to outbid each other.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we've got here. When $1,200 was reached, my antagonist turned to me with an evil gleam in his eyes and said, "How high are you going to bid?" "Higher than you do, monsieur." And the bids rose to $1,300. Then the villain on the block, that's the auctioneer, becoming impatient, raved and cursed, crying, "Give, give!" For the higher the bids rose, the more anxious he became.
Mm-hmm.
I bid $1,450. My contestant stood silent. The hammer rose, trembled, lowered, rose, fell, and the fiend flushed. And quick as thought, dropped his hammer and, unbuttoning Eliza's dress, threw it back, exhibiting to the gaze of 2,000 people her superb neck and breast, shouting in the true professional tone, "Look here, gentlemen, who is going to lose such a chance as this? Here is a girl fit to be the mistress of a king."
Yikes. This is a story here.
This has taken an unexpected twist for us in the 21st century, for sure.
This is way beyond the normal price that they might have arrived at, though, right?
Yes, this is a top-of-the-line price. A more typical price would be something like $1,200.
Okay.
Something like that. It's almost kind of sad for us to say this, but it's like any industry. the price could be $800, mm-hmm. it could be $1,000, it could be $1,200, it could be $500. It depends on what the product is exactly, make and model.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have skills? Slaves with particular skills fetch higher prices.
Mm-hmm.
So they believe that this is top of the line. And that's why we're getting up here to these $1,400 and $1,500 kind of prices. A suppressed cry of shame and contempt, anger and grief, a bitter murmur of Kentucky wrath and disgust rolled like a wave through that throng. Southern women blushed, such exclamations as "too bad," "what a shame," "horrible," could be heard on every side from both North and South. Bids rose to $1,475. That was my bid. Then there was another lull in the contest, another moment of suspense. The auctioneer seemed at his wit's end, and then followed a scene at which civilization blushed, and angels wept, and the human heart sickened and turned away. For to stimulate bidding, to appeal to and rouse the lowest passions in man, he turned his victim's profile to the excited crowd, and lifting her skirts, laid bare her beautiful symmetrical body from her feet to her waist, and with his brutal sacrilegious hand smote her white flesh, exclaiming, "Ah, gentlemen, who is going to be the winner of this prize?" "Shame, shame," they cried. And Boston and New Orleans shed tears, wept side by side. The Frenchman bid $1,480. "Are you all done? Once, twice, do I hear no more? Three!" And the hammer quivered as the Frenchman's face flushed with triumph. "Three!" And the hammer fell slowly. $1,485. My contestant turned away with an air of indifference. The hammer fell. She was mine. She fainted. "You got her damn cheap, sir," said the auctioneer. "What are you going to do with her?" "Free her, sir," uh-huh. I cried. I woke a cheer which rose to a true Kentucky shout that rent the air and rang far and wide, proclaiming liberty to the captives of America, Russia, Brazil, and all the world.
Mm-hmm.
And you had the aha moment on this one.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because you were worried about why the Reverend was there to buy a slave.
Well, yeah. That would be concerning. He was up to something there. Boy, he could really spin a yarn, too. He must have told this story all the time.
I bet he did, because they were storytellers there.
Yeah, yeah. But that's a kind of a neat thing that he kept outbidding and outbidding, determined to buy her so he could free her.
Yeah, and that was the point of his entire being there. He wanted to help. This is an abolitionist tactic.
Mm-hmm.
And so a slave owner can manumit a slave, set a slave free. And this was the whole point. We're going to take up collections, or however we're going to get the money.
Yeah.
We're going to go down here. We'll bid whatever it takes. Money is no object.
Right.
Because we want to help these people.
Yeah. And it's kind of probably he wanted to whip the crowd up into that kind of momentum, because they were just disturbed by it. And then when he did make that moment at the end where he freed her, you know, it had that impact of, this is the right thing to do.
Hmm. That may be unintentional on his part. I know the auctioneer wanted that. The auctioneer wants it to be as exciting as possible. I suspect he would have liked to have gotten away with only paying $800.
Or even less money, right.
Yeah, freeing a second slave with the remainder.
Right.
It's hard to know, but he did seem to enjoy it somehow, though, didn't
yeah.
he? That he got these people.
Exactly.
Yeah, he exactly. beat them at their very own
beat
game.
Beat them at their game, right.
That was kind of the thing about that. I think definitely you're onto something there.
Probably gave him a great deal of satisfaction, too, to immediately make that point to everyone.
Oh,
turn
you know
around
it did.
And she's free.
Yeah, and you saw the crowd reacted.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the 19th century, they're not used to things being lewd and all of this kind of
right,
stuff.
Right, that's what this story sounds like.
Yeah, they were shocked. Everybody there was shocked.
So this didn't happen all the time.
I would suspect this is something
super
rare. I mean, maybe
have the auctions,
hints of it or something.
Right.
That would shock the sensibilities of the 19th century.
Yeah.
For sure. But already we've got to pay some more bills.
Okay.
And we have got another sponsor lined up. the United States Gas, Coal, and Coke Company. Pure coal means our Kentucky coal gives the most heat, burns up clean, and makes no clinkers. I had to look up a clinker.
Yeah, what is a clinker?
If there are impurities in the coal,
you're going to hear it.
Then it leaves this little thing at the end.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a waste byproduct.
Oh, it's actually
and,
like a little thing in the way.
And that thing is the, yeah, it's a physical thing. That's okay. The clinker. I suppose because you're throwing it away later and it makes the clink in the can or something like that.
People just got sick of all those clinkers.
Well, you definitely don't want that. I mean, you want it to burn and you want to get your money's worth. You don't want the impurities. They've got multiple sizes down there. Family lump. Well-screened, 11 cents per bushel. Large egg, also 11 cents per bushel. Large nut, 10 cents per bushel.
Sure.
And regular nut, 10 cents per bushel.
Now, why is a large nut and a regular nut the exact same price? You just prefer the large nut.
Yeah, it seems like there should be a differential there. I know if I were the coal company, yeah. I would have 11 for the large. Then go maybe 12 for the egg.
Like
and
one penny?
And finally 13 yeah. for the family lump.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I would have too. These prices, or the not the prices, but the sizes. I looked that up as well, and it's kind of like in hail, you hear quarter-sized hail, pea-sized hail, baseball-sized hail. It's the same kind of thing here. It turns out that they've got a screen and they sift the coal through there.
Okay.
If it falls through a certain size,
right.
That's nut-sized.
Okay.
If it falls through a larger one, that's egg-sized. And then finally all the way up to lump. And you remember the whole thing about Santa was going to give you a lump of coal.
Oh, there you go. Christmas. Right. Exactly.
So
yeah. Just a big chunk of coal.
That's a little connection that we've still got to then.
Interesting, though, in that time. And people would just they burn it like firewood.
Yeah, this is a home heating fuel.
Right.
100% right. Have you ever smelled it being burned?
I don't think so.
It's got its own peculiar smell. Mm-hmm. It kind of smells like burning rubber.
Right.
In a way.
And they would have those, well, what I've seen is kind of those drop windows in their basement where the coal would be delivered down into a chute. They would go into the bottom of their basement where their heating was, right?
Now, that I haven't seen as much about.
Oh, yeah. They would just kind of dump it through and
yeah,
it would be right
there
ready.
Yeah, they do deliver other things in that era, for sure. Yeah. Things like ice is delivered and milk, eventually, early 20th century, is delivered to the home. Doctors used to make house calls, so yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Not everybody's got transportation then, so probably you definitely want that delivered. I would say that would be the case.
What about family nut or family lump though? What does that mean? Like, just a
sounds
have
like
a lot of people in the house to keep warm.
A particular variety of lump. So there's more than just these four grades. There's probably about 12 or 20 different grades of it, and so maybe this is just a popular seller. At that particular size. Each one is a certain diameter or circumference.
Now, Brett, let me ask you one more question.
Yeah.
What does this mean? This business is the United States Gas, Coal, and Coke Company.
That's interesting because that's not Coca-Cola. I think that's another one of like a heating kind of terminology. So it's
right.
kind of like AT&T was American Telephone and
right.
Telegraph. They had two different ways that they communicated or something.
Mm-hmm.
There's something like that going on here. I would have to look into that one a little more deeply to see exactly why that is in their particular name.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's a term that they just used in that way that we don't know.
Yeah. That's the secret to all this. It's just like the sizes. You have to look up what large egg means
right.
in that context.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you do, typically it makes perfect sense.
Right.
But we just don't have that usage anymore. Final thoughts. So out of all this stuff, what do you think you will remember the most?
Probably that 12%.
The 12% interest rate. You got hung up on that and just
I'm
never
stunned.
Really got past it.
I'm
huh?
stunned. And I was stunned that this came from 1981.
Yeah, oh, more recent than you thought.
More
you might
recent
have
than
that
I would have thought, right?
Than way back. Yeah.
And that is a way that people would save money. It was a valid way. You put it in the bank, you collect interest.
Yeah. It was the whole reason to put things in the bank.
Sure.
Because you're going to get the money. Yeah, I mean, that's exactly. But then again, we saw the flip side, which is you can't afford to take out a home loan.
Right.
Because they're going to have a really high interest rate on that. Mm-hmm. And that's going to make it very difficult for you as an up-and-coming person.
Well, what about you, Brent? Then. What's your takeaway? What's your favorite part?
My favorite part was definitely when we learned that the Reverend was there to do something good.
Right.
That's kind of the thing that saves the whole story from mm-hmm. being some sort of a sad affair that you wouldn't even really take that much pleasure in.
Yeah,
in,
a real
in
shocker.
Yeah. So we had the happy twist at the end. You got to like a story, especially with a topic like that has a happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that's definitely the thing. But sadly, we have turned to the final page of this chapter. But not to worry. We'll be back when Back in the Day is new, and we'll have more old Kentucky tales for you. Special thanks to our sound engineer, Todd Birdsong, the Paducah School of Art and Design, and WKMS. And the rest is history.